Hi, I'm Coach Elisguera, and thank you very much for joining us again for another episode of our Facts First podcast. So for today, we're going to talk about the forensic investigation here in the Philippines, how it's being conducted by our law enforcers, and how certain, for example, evidence are being mishandled. So for today, we're joined by Dr. Raquel Fortun. She's considered as the mother of forensic pathology here in the country. Thank you very much for joining us, Dr. Fortun.
Hi, Ian.
Okay. So first, give us an overview of what forensic science is, and to be specific about it, what forensic pathology is all about.
Well, forensic science is when you apply various disciplines, that's it, in science, to legal matters. Hence the word forensic this, forensic that. And therefore, in medicine, pathology is also applied legal issues. And this is where forensic pathology comes in. So you apply your knowledge of, you know, the changes in the body, what do you see, what are the effects on function, etc., specifically addressing legal implications. And that would be, for instance, is this the real person you're looking for? So that's identity. What did he die of? So that would be cause of death. And we also have this classification, manner of death. It's more of how the person died. So basically, pathology, forensic pathology would answer, you know, what happened in terms of, especially if you have trauma cases, violence, there's violence involved. There are lots of legal questions. So that's forensic pathology in a nutshell.
So in the Philippines, how big is this group of forensic pathologists?
Well, I think I was the first one to return. So hence the mother of forensic pathology tag. A lot of Filipinos actually are forensic pathologists, but they're all over the world, not in the Philippines. About 5 years after I came back, another colleague in the department, Dr. Cecilia Lim, also a pathologist. She left. Similarly, she went to a medical examiner's office in the US and came back. So right now, the two of us are acknowledged to be, you know, pathologists with actual training in forensic pathology, and therefore recognized by the Philippine Society of Pathologists.
How about the others? So there are only two acknowledged forensic pathologists in the Philippines with training?
Yes, but you'd better ask the Philippine Society of Pathologists yourself, but that's it.
Yeah, but so how
only two.
What do you call the others who are conducting something similar?
Well, in the Philippines, they are called medical legal officers, which is a very general term. They're practically doctors. In some institutions, and their job is to, that's it, accept referrals when you have dead bodies. Sometimes when you have clinical cases, you know, survivors of assault, violence, etc. But apparently, the term is so general that it's applied to many doctors, even the city and municipal health officers all over the country, because there are not really enough medical legal officers of PNP and NBI. So it's a very general term. So the minimum is you are a licensed doctor. That's it. The state does not care whether you're trained, what do you know about examining these dead bodies and so on. Do you have equipment? Do you have a place for the examination? What kind of report are you going to come up with?
So for the medical examiners or medical legal officers, whatever you want to call them, who are trained here in the Philippines, what kind of training do they get?
Well, generally, in the institutions they're in, they have what they call on-the-job training. I've heard of that. which means they you apply, you get the position, and then a more senior medical legal officer would mentor you or something, and then maybe 6 months. I've heard of that. I'm not too sure if that's still the norm. It's not really formal training. It's just to introduce you to the work, I suppose. And the problem is what little that senior mentor knows is passed on to you. And that's how you actually perpetuate this, what they call traditional ways of examining bodies, writing a report, coming up with conclusions, and so on. So there are a lot of limitations around. And at the same time, I see a lot of inbreeding, meaning if you're in a certain institution, you are not really open to learning new stuff. You don't have a library of forensic science references. You don't participate in the international scientific community. You don't do research. So it's very frustrating because the mistakes just keep going on. Let's start with the crime scene, okay? Because as I said, that's where it starts. You have a dead body at the scene, and there's a lot of physical evidence there. So, you know, the textbook way is, if you're trained, that scene has to be protected, secured. So that means somebody has to take charge of it. And I don't see that in the Philippines. You've got people just coming in. I used to wage war on media because that's what you do.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, you and then you think that's part of your job. But the thing is, if you talk forensic science, that's why you limit the people there. There is physical evidence at the scene that can be destroyed by your presence. And what else? You yourself are bringing in material. You're shedding, okay? You're stepping on stuff. You're touching. You're breathing. And you're contaminating the scene. Okay, so it's not just media. It's a lot of people. And that's not done in the Philippines. What else? Okay, let's move on to the body. That body, the first thing you have to do actually is pronounce death. Because if that person is still alive, forget forensics, you'll have to save the life of that person. That's priority. So that's the only justification for removing that body, tending to it, applying basic, you know, airway, breathing, circulation stuff, maybe doing CPR, or you decide you're going to get this body and bring him or her to a hospital for better medical care. Okay. But that body, once dead, is best left at the scene. You don't move it.
Why is that?
Because that you're going to disturb, that's it, materials, the location, the position, objects around. They can help you in the reconstruction of what happened. So just leave it there. You don't see that in the Philippines also. Some bodies are obviously dead, so nobody does the pronouncing at the scene. They're obviously dead. And then they pick up the dead body and bring the body to a hospital. And then some hospitals, I have heard them say, doctors, ER doctors simply would not even let that body inside the ER. Because like, for instance, private hospitals say that the meter would now run. You know, that's going to be a referral or consultation in the ER already. Yeah. And some doctors even attempt IV lines, intubations and all. when the patients are already dead or dying. Okay, so pronouncement of death is one. And the other is, okay, so the dead body also gives you a lot of information. This is where you let the dead speak. And that body, the most detailed examination you're going to do there is in the morgue. So that body has to be properly transported. You protect the evidence. And something I have never seen in the Philippines is basic first world putting the hands in paper bags. And the purpose is you want to protect material on the hands. You want no question that the hands were, you know, not contaminated during transport. That is never done in the Philippines.
Can you cite, doctor, a specific case? Perhaps you don't have to.
I have a lot.
Okay. But can you cite specific cases where you thought
that... I'll just talk about
in general terms?
Cases in general. Okay, actually, name anything. Actually, it's the same. You're going to court, you know, the prosecution would file a case about a killing, right? But what does the lawyer have? Very little CSI, no physical evidence at the scene, or just some semblance of it. You've seen these spot reports. You've seen very minimalist investigation reports. You know, especially for someone like me, because I reviewed them, they don't tell anything. Okay, what more the autopsy reports? Okay, autopsy reports. It's just a classic in the Philippines autopsy report that is one page long. That's crazy.
Okay.
That's crazy.
Let's cite a specific case. Last August 10, Randa Lechanis, a former consultant of the National Democratic Front of the Philippines Peace Panel, he was found dead with multiple stab wounds, right? In the Valiches, Quezon City. And there was another body found, that of Louis Tagapia, the neighbor. Talk to us about the way the autopsy was handled and how the report came out.
Okay, I'm familiar with that. And that's pretty recent. And that's typical, that's classic. Right. For one thing, we don't have a death investigation system, I said, right? Mm. So lots of questions for Mr. Echanis's case. The good thing was, his body was identified by the family, and the family was assisted by lawyers, etc., pushing for an independent examination. Right. So, good news: body was found recently, so fresh. You have a requesting party. Family consents to an examination. And they were actually pushing for it. Okay. And yes, I was able to examine that body. Fortunately for me, it's only in Metro Manila, because my choice is you bring the body to UP Manila, because we have a morgue. I have staff. Somehow, well, it's not first world, but we can do a lot of things there. Mm-hmm. And then, also most importantly, PGH is just a few meters away. I badly need x-rays, okay? Especially since the initial information was he was shot, okay? Very importantly. And then, so I do an examination. I end up with a forensic autopsy report, an autopsy report that's 9 pages long, because so many details are there. That is why you do an autopsy. You have to address the basics of, no question that was Mr. Randall Echanis. So identity, okay? I asked for his clothes. Good thing they were not thrown. So the details, the examination, the findings on the clothes are there. And then we do a general external exam. Everything. Everything from his scars, you know, did he have tattoos, the appearance of his teeth, whether his earlobes are pierced, those details are there. So, and then, of course, the injuries. And the injuries, he had a lot. All of them were described in detail. And this is complemented by documentation. So lots of pictures also. Maybe we had in total about 500 digital pictures of it. And then what makes the report 9 pages long, actually, is that standard portion where you check all what we call the organ systems, the brain, the heart, the gastrointestinal tract, and so on. And that's the reason why in my report, I also noted he had some hardening of the arteries. He had a big heart because of hypertension. His kidneys were not really pristine. He had a big prostate, and so on. Okay? That is the difference between an autopsy done by someone trained in pathology and someone who's not. Okay. And that's the reason why a non-pathologist would end up with nothing, meaning just a page and just very general statements. Like, for instance, I saw the report of his neighbor, Mr. Tagapia. Unfortunately, that case was not referred to us. And I saw the report that came out. Classic one-page report. I saw an image of it, and it was a typical Philippine official one-page medical-legal report. Supposedly, an autopsy was done. And precisely that's the problem. If you are a doctor not really trained to do these things, what can you say? I managed to come up with a 9-page autopsy report. My minimum typically is 6 pages. These are the simple cases, but you've got complicated ones, you've got lots of injuries, so much to say. So it can run 9, even 12 pages long. And so this is the difference between a doctor who does not know how to examine a dead body and someone who does. Our autopsy reports are more exhaustive because we check everything. That one-page report is a typical one. Actually, very minimal information is there. It's a classic Philippine National Police form. Okay, that's another problem. I've asked them about it before. Why do you insist on a pre-printed form with some heading, some very minimal spaces for things? Like, for instance, you've got a section there for the external findings, okay? You've got a section for findings in general, and then remark or conclusion, etc. What happens is if you type it onto that pre-printed report, you tend to compress whatever you have, you know, into those small spaces. I've asked before, have you not heard of word processing? You know, where you just continually type the report and then it runs. And then that's why when you see them, and a particular doctor has more to say, for instance, regarding the injuries, you will see them say, see next page, okay? And then you flip the page, and then it's continued at the back. So it really doesn't make sense. So then...
What were the findings, doctor, on the body of Louis Tagapia based on that one-page autopsy report?
Okay, I've not memorized it, but it's so minimal anyway. For instance, the only conclusion there regarding cause of death was something like blunt force injuries or something like that, okay? And that leaves you hanging. What kind of injuries? What do you mean by blunt force? Where are they? A blunt force injury can be an abrasion, contusion, laceration. If they're just on the skin, they're not going to kill. However, a contusion in the brain, in the heart, a laceration of the liver, those are blunt force injuries. Meaning their findings are not what we call etiologically specific. You know, it does not explain why this person died. But then in the first place, if you look at their form, standard, the purpose of this laboratory examination, there's a statement there, is to determine cause of death. Okay? Lahat yan. Parating ganun ang sinasabi. And that is so wrong. Because the reason why you're doing an examination is not just to explain cause of death. I've mentioned already before, you have to address several issues. One, that this is the right person, identity. What is the basis of your identity? And the cause of death has to be more specific. You cannot just say, again, a lot of doctors are guilty of this. You cannot just say multiple injuries. What kind of injuries? Where are they? How did they exactly kill that person? And then actually we go beyond. Forensic pathology goes beyond that. Of all the injuries, which one was fatal? You know, lawyers want that. What kind of defense reaction, if any, was there? You know, how did the individual react to the assault? You try and reconstruct what happened. Which injuries came first? Sometimes you can tell that. And then this is the reason why we check everything inside. Was there any other factor, like you, what we call a comorbidity, a natural disease, complication, or a pre-existing condition which modified the effects of the injury and so on? How long did this person survive? They have to be addressed. But then it just says there to determine cause of death. And they cannot even really put a finger on what happened. And there's another. They do not commit to manner. How the person died. And the classic way by which it is categorized is, for one thing, did a person die of natural causes? So that would be disease, okay? Or if it's not natural, then was it unnatural? And this is where assault comes in. Homicide, we only use the word homicide for that. If it was self-inflicted and intentional, then that is suicide. If there was no intent, it was unforeseen, then we classify certain deaths as accident and so on. Or if despite an investigation, you cannot really say, we have a category of undetermined. You're not going to see that on a medical legal report in the Philippines. You're supposed to commit to a manner of death in the death certificate. Okay? The death certificate, a doctor has to say, what is the cause? And what is the manner? And again, in the Philippines, these medical legal deaths certified by these medical legal officers or doctors, they do not write down what is the manner. They leave it blank.
So in this case, if that those were the findings based on that one-page report on the body of Louie Tagapia, how could those findings affect, let's say, the resolution or the prosecution of the case, given the fact that based on your own autopsy on the body of Randa Lechanis, you came out with 9 pages and they had to be considered together, right? Because they were found in the same crime scene.
Well, I would recommend, you know, if you're going to ask how it's going to affect the case, the prosecution or the defense, I'd rather that you ask a lawyer. But from a forensic pathologist standpoint, the best is for me to explain what happened to the two. It was just one incident. And I have a lot of questions. Like, for instance, were they killed the same way? Because the presumption is the assailant or assailants could be the same. Were the same weapons used? And again, I'm just talking of bodies. The scenes would have been very, very critical. Like, for instance, there was a lot of blood in one, okay? I know of one because a lot of stab wounds were there. Very bloody scene. Then the blood of the victim most likely got onto the person of the assailant or assailants. They touched it. It was on the floor. They stepped on it. They left a lot of things. Now, what about the other case? How did this person supposedly die of just blunt force injuries? What kind? Was he hit on the head repeatedly, which I also saw on the others, on the other victim? But it's very frustrating for me, having seen one but not having seen the other. Will this prosper in court? I don't know. But as far as I know is, if you ask me what I saw on one, that one body I examined, I'm prepared. Mm-hmm. I'm prepared. I'm going to show you that 9-page report. I still have the notes. I have the body diagrams. I have the 500+ pictures. I have documentation of the weapon we found, the clothes, etc. And you can ask me, if you put me on the stand as an expert witness, you can ask me hypothetical questions, my opinion regarding how he was killed and so on.
Because on
but can you do that for the other victim? I don't think so. Problem. I don't think so.
And I think it's such a great disservice on the part, or injustice on the part of the other victim, if authorities failed in this respect, in terms of properly processing the body, for example, or conducting an honest-to-goodness autopsy. By the way, just to refresh our memory here, what exactly were the were your findings on the body of Mr. Ronda Lechanis?
He sustained a lot of injuries, multiple. He apparently, just to summarize, he was stabbed multiple times by at least two types of weapons. A bladed one, similar to a knife, for instance, kind of longer. The stab wounds were wider. And then also a pointed object, which we actually recovered in the body. But the one fatal wound was produced by that pointed weapon, which was left there. So all the other injuries, the sharp force trauma, the stab wounds were actually very superficial. He also sustained blunt force trauma on the head. So apparently he was also hit on the head repeatedly, which could have been also like threatening. But the one stab wound that killed him was the one that went through the back and into the heart, particularly the aorta, that big artery where he bled from. So that much is clear. So if you put me on the stand and ask me what happened to him, I can explain it. But for the other victim, unfortunately, you said it's a disservice. Yes, it is. You know, someone died. And it's happening every day all over the Philippines. It's been happening for years, for decades, because we really have a very poor criminal justice system. We have poor forensic science methods, procedures. I've seen it. The frustration is it does not work for the victim. But remember, it also does not work for the accused. Mm-hmm. Because
Go, doctor.
All right. It's also a disservice to the accused. It's so unfair. I get these cases where parties come to me. I don't choose. But show me the evidence. What is there to review? And many times, the party who's not afraid of the truth actually is the one seeking my help. And so you just call it as you see it. And the accused in the Philippines, it doesn't work for them too, especially here. If you're put in jail, you languish in jail for so long. Court cases, court hearings come what? Minimum 3 months in between or apart. So you get jailed for a very long time. And the evidence again presented, you know, to support the accusation against you is so, so superficial and unscientific. And so at first I was wondering, because I've seen how it works in the first world criminal justice system. I have been to U.S. hearings. I have testified in one. And it's so different. Like, for instance, before a case is filed in court in a first world setting, the prosecution, the investigators, they make sure that they've got everything fixed. They have answers. They can successfully convince, you know, the judge or the jury there what happened and so on, that the accused is guilty. But in the Philippines, there is a rush to filing a case in court. And I have heard this over and over. Sa korte na lang kayo magharapan or magpakitaan ng ebidensya. That's not how it should be. And then in the first world setting, continuous trial yan. In the Philippines, hindi, staggered. So pahirapan. Tapos the state is so passive here. In other countries, the state takes charge. That's it. You have a death investigation system. A body has to be autopsied in a professional way. That's it. You have a medical examiner office for it. And then filing a case in court in the Philippines, bahala yung kamag-anak.
Yeah.
It also works the other way. Ayaw nung kamag-anak mag-file, ayaw nilang magpa-autopsy. You get away with it. So, ganun yun eh. Tapos, unfortunately, at the top of it, you've got the judge, right? He's the one who has to be convinced. And in the Philippines, what I've noted is, kung mababaw yung prosecution, mababaw yung defense, unfortunately, pati yung judge, mababaw din. Meaning yung appreciation niya, pareho lang. So, nakakalusot eh. So, it doesn't work for anybody, I think. What's happening in the Philippines criminal justice system, umabot man yan sa korte, it's so unfair. It's so unfair. And it's most unfair, especially to the one who died because he, she is gone.
Sure.
And it's really up to the people left behind to do something about it.
In short, garbage in, garbage out. This is what's happening here, right? So finally, Dr. Fortune, what are the things that we need to improve on, and how do we do it? Because you cannot stay frustrated forever, right? I mean, what are the priority items that should be fixed, perhaps in the short term or in the medium term?
I've gone over this so many times. As I said, I've been around 25 years already. One of the first things I tried to do was to raise the bar in terms of training, awareness, etc. And like, for instance, I'm with the University of the Philippines. I tried to help push for a Forensic Science Institute to at least cover the lack of training aspect of it. I'm in the University of the Philippines. It offers me independence, you know, I mean, the academe and so on. What I've done is I've just tried to teach. I've been teaching these past few years. I've been using some cases that come my way for training. I've also tried to push for a law. The most basic we need is a mandatory autopsy bill to finally define what cases require an investigation. We don't have that.
It's quite surprising that we don't even have that, right?
Exactly. You listen to the Department of Health. You know, death investigation is a health concern, a health issue. Medical examiner offices abroad are under the health department. That gives it independence from the police. Police do the killing and what? They do the investigation. Their medical legal officers examine the bodies. The evidence goes to them because they have the crime labs. There's no independence there. And there's not much science that goes in. And that's why in other countries, that's it. They are either outsource, like they have private crime labs doing the technical examinations, and that's it. The medical examiner office, the forensic pathologists are not with the police, or they rely on the academe, so university based. But again, there's not much I can do. Early on, I was very much gung-ho about, you know, I'm going to change the Philippines. I'm going to do this and that. But right now, I'm kinder to myself. And I think, well, I tried. I'm just waiting for retirement. I'm just a few years away. And I just hope that the younger generation coming after me would have an easier time, because I know I had the worst of it. I had a lot of people hitting me about so many things. I might have paved the way for them already. That's what I hope.
But speaking of conflict of interest, you mentioned the police, right? Right now, the problem is also the number of killings related to drug war by President Duterte, right? So I understand you've autopsied several of these victims, the bodies of these victims, right?
As I said, some referrals come my way. Mm-hmm. These are from families, from NGOs, from legal groups.
But when you do that, do you get a first crack on the body, or usually those bodies had been autopsied by the police already?
Well, some of them, rarely would I get them fresh. Okay. I have not had a case in the Philippines, I think, where the body was still at the scene. Remember what I told you? And I would, you know, a la medical examiner, body at the scene, and then I'm called and I see the body and then do the things I should do at the scene. I get them much later. Yes, I see them a lot already embalmed, so you've got a lot of changes there. But I'd rather get them embalmed than unembalmed, actually, given the weather in the Philippines. So embalming may give you artifacts, but at the same time also would preserve, all right? Yes, I have seen them already examined by other doctors. Sometimes the examination is just what, as I mentioned earlier, it's just an external postmortem exam, meaning the doctor just simply checked the body outside, okay? Sometimes I see them already autopsied, okay? And the standards are quite variable. The incisions are weird. It's not our standard Y incision, the way a pathologist would do it. The most common is a simple straight line like that. I've seen them opened with organs taken out. Some are hardly incised. Again, not the way a pathologist would do it. I've seen them, you know, pretending to be autopsied with an external incision, and then when you open, the organs are still there. So what kind of autopsy was it? And then on paper, they say it's an autopsy. I know of one case, drug war related, where the wife complained that she was charged for the autopsy. She thought the body was autopsied, but then I said, no, the organs were still there. Anyway, that works for me also, because I would rather have the organs still in place than someone, a body with, you know, with organs chopped up randomly by a non-pathologist. But yes, I have seen the shooting cases, and they're very difficult to do because of all of those things. The embalming, the injuries are sutured, the incisions made by other doctors and so on. And rarely do I have access to clothes, no access to the scene, no access to accounts, and investigations are so really superficial.
So based on the bodies that you were able to examine, bodies of victims of related to the drug war, did you notice any pattern or any, let's say, indication or any indications that there might have been an effort to conceal what really happened based on what came out in the report?
Well, for one thing, if we're talking of standards of investigation, they're really poorly investigated. Many times there's just a template regarding the incident. You know, what happened? The classic nanlaban, right? It's just like you have already a template on file, and you just change the names, the dates, the places, etc. And sometimes this is how they're caught. Like, for instance, the story is a classic by-bust operation. And then somehow, nanlaban, the victim fought back. But then they tend to forget, hello, the house was broken into. And there is physical evidence, the door is smashed, the windows are broken, etc. And you've got survivors saying, no, we were asleep. So how can that be a by-bust? And then you've got the victim just wearing his underwear. He was asleep. And I've seen a case where I think the scene was really obviously tampered with, because you've got the body dead inside the house. You've got the blood stains, etc., documented to some extent by the investigators and the family. But then the casings must have been picked up and thrown somewhere else, because they're not consistent with the shooting happening inside the house.
So even the conceal was
there is an attempt.
I mean, even the effort to conceal the evidence is quite sloppy.
Yeah, definitely. Yes. And you know, if you have an independent, objective, scientific investigation, you're going to pick this up. But right now, the way we have it, I think there was really, someone took advantage of the fact that our institutions are weak to begin with, that we are not objective, scientific. But sometimes it's too obvious. It's really very obvious. And this is the reason why I hope international investigators would come in and take a look at what's happening in the Philippines. Because we just cannot do the investigations. We are not doing it right because we have limitations. And I think because we simply don't want the truth to come out.
But unfortunately, that was part of the latest recommendation, right? Coming from the United Nations body, saying that they don't have to go to the extent at this point of conducting an investigation into the killings here in the Philippines, because supposedly the Philippine government has decided to come up with a review panel.
Yeah, that's very disappointing. Because exactly, that's what we need international intervention for. Isn't it already obvious that the investigations locally done are not enough? And so what kind of, my question is, what kind of a review panel will that be? Will this be in the control of our existing institutions? Even if they do work independently and objectively and scientifically, who's going to decide, you know, on the findings? Who's going to act on them? Is this the international community buying time for the present administration? Why don't they just step in and take a look at what's happening and decide once and for all?
But based on the examinations that you've conducted on several of these victims, did you notice any rampant or sustained effort to conceal evidence, to come up with stories that would hide the truth regarding those killings, yung mga nanlaban cases?
Well, some general observations, okay? The victims I've seen sustained multiple gunshot wounds of the head and trunk. Okay, now these are areas of the bodies where, you know, if you're going to shoot somebody, these are meant to kill, right? So, cause of death, all right, you've got brain injuries and then lungs and then anywhere else there. Multiple. And another observation is, many of them, I've noted what we would call defense type injuries. And they're called defense type injuries because they are found here. And this is where you reconstruct. And typically, instinctively, one tries to protect the head, the face, etc. Mm-hmm. And so that's why we call them defense type. And so that kind of runs counter to the nanlaban, classic nanlaban excuse. And then the other is also interesting. I've encountered some injuries which are very difficult to explain. And not knowing the scene, not knowing other investigation findings, they raise a lot of questions as far as I'm concerned. This is where forensic pathology comes in. One classic example. I found one with a gunshot wound in the, what we call the deltoid region, mm-hmm. you know, where you get your immunization here, yeah. right? And surprisingly, his axilla was clear, okay? If you've got a gunshot wound there, wouldn't that bullet now exit here in the armpit? But no, in his case, it did not. Surprisingly, and this is why we do the autopsy, we establish the track of the bullet. Mm-hmm. And that bullet actually passed through the arm and actually went inside the chest. What does that tell you? If you reconstruct, just knowing anatomy, his arm must have been raised when that shot was fired. And that's the difference between forensic pathology and just ordinary, you know, medicine, where you're not a specialist.
So the fact that his arm was raised, what did that tell us? What did it tell you?
Again, that kind of suggests that maybe his arm was raised as an act of surrender. Mm-hmm. And I have seen that also in other cases where the body was documented at the scene. You've got arms like this, okay? Although one was spread out, and then on the floor, you've got smudges. Well, ideally, you need a crime scene specialist that's specific for blood spatter. But that was kind of obvious. The smears of blood on the floor, okay? That means most likely he died like this, and one arm was left like that, but the other one was repositioned. And guess what? On his hand was a gun. Okay? And you see that a lot. You see that a lot in the Philippines as evidence of nanlaban, this person was armed. Okay?
How many such cases have you encountered? Yung mga ganitong cases, yung based on the autopsy, based on your autopsy, it seemed that they did not actually fight back. But what came out in the police? Mga ilang cases?
It's very difficult to really identify. It's something like I found some questions raised regarding the official version. Okay? Because as I keep pointing out, I don't have access to many things. Very rarely would I have the entire thing, meaning scene, body, statements. In fact, I've had a lot of cases where I still have the bullets. They leave a lot of bullets on the body, even the already autopsied ones. You know, that is evidence that should be analyzed, should go to the APHIS. I'm sorry, the IBIS, the bullet identification system. It's automated already.
And how many bodies have you examined, those that are related to the drug war so far?
Since 2016, if you're going to chop it off, maybe around 20 to 30, something like that. But this is just a very general number.
So among those 20 to 30 bodies that you were able to examine, how many of those bodies raise questions as far as you are concerned regarding the possibility that what actually happened was not what was reflected in the official police report? You medyo napaisip kayo.
Actually, lahat sila napapaisip ka. And that's the healthy. That's the healthy attitude, you know. Again, I cannot give you an exact number. I am supposed to write up all of these, you know, come up with a study or whatever. I haven't really done that. I'm still in the process of actually finishing some autopsy reports. But the idea is, that's it. All of these cases, actually, you don't accept at face value just because that is the account. Precisely, you're examining the body to let the dead speak, right? And you're trying to understand what the dead person has to say. Limited as you are in your examination. But yes, well, in a general sense, I have seen a lot of these cases, which raises questions about the allegations.
In some of these cases, based on your account, some of these bodies, or many of these bodies, were telling authorities that, hey, take a closer look. We did not fight back.
Yes. And, you know, it's not just also the bodies I have seen, but some raised by media. Documented by media and so on. I have been asked to review some findings and I have pointed out some, you know, inconsistencies, some questions. Like, for instance, Ian De Los Santos?
The classic one.
The classic one. And it's supposed to be a success story in the sense that it was prosecuted and somehow successfully they secured a conviction of some sort, but all then if you review the case, that?
All because of the CCTV.
Yeah, but again, if you apply the standards of a first world forensic investigation to that case, oh wow, it's something like in a first world country, they wouldn't even put, you know, they wouldn't even file a case given the paucity of physical evidence. Like me reading the medical legal reports, seeing the scene photos, I have a lot of questions regarding that case. So if you put me on the stand what I might have to say could actually benefit the other side, meaning even the defense, because I'm going to point out a lot of things unsettled, unanswered by the evidence presented.
Like what? What were some of the questions that you had?
Like, for instance, the autopsy, okay, autopsy done, to determine cause of death, one-page report, and then flip side, maybe a bit at the back. This was done by PNP. Remember, to determine cause of death. That's the objective of their exam. And true enough, when they found the two gunshot wounds to the head, they stopped. Okay, because death na tayo, gunshot wounds to the head. Okay. However, POW, remember POW? Their forensic team examined the body with a lot of fanfare, media in attendance, and so on. But I think they did not also do an internal exam. No internal exam. But to their credit, they found a third gunshot wound. And to their credit, they documented it. And when I saw the documentation, I would agree. Oh, okay, I would agree. That looks like a gunshot wound. It looks like an entry wound. And that was on the side of the body, right? But then they never proceeded to answer what happened to that particular bullet. Where did it go? They never said there's another exit. So it's somewhere in the body still, okay?
Why was that important?
Because you have to address everything. Like, if he was shot three times, not two, when were these shots fired? Okay. Was he being shot at while walking? Okay, this is where you correlate maybe with your CCTV. Or remember, he was already found on the ground. The final fatal resting position was he was crouched on the ground, a very dirty, smelly place, in a fetal position. And that position actually is very telling. It's one of defense. It's surrender. You're protecting yourself, okay? But his left side was exposed. So there's a wall, his left side was exposed. And this would be consistent. The entry wounds identified were here, on the ear and the back of the head, and they exited here. So it's kind of likely that he was shot in that position, in that location, and his head was like this, okay? But there's a third shot here. Is it possible that he was also shot here at the same time that he was shot in the head? What else? I think three police officers were accused
and convicted.
And eventually convicted, okay? But they were acquitted on the charges of planting of evidence, I think. But anyway, you have to answer this issue of, so which gun fired those injuries or those gunshot wounds, etc.? Which one killed him, right? So I don't see anything, I did not see anything in the report regarding the physical evidence, the ballistics. They may have found some casings, but I didn't see any report tracing the casings to which particular gun, okay? So three officers, three guns, which one fired it? What else? That bullet in the chest is nowhere to be found in any of the reports. The prosecution, the court was simply silent about it. The bullets that exited, they should have been recovered. And again, the scene investigation is silent about that. So if this were a first world court case, the defense would have had a field day warding off any accusations by the prosecution.
Raising reasonable doubt.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And that's why you go into a case in court prepared. You check everything.
Okay. So basically, that's one important lesson. You need to have all bases covered. But again, you need to have the proper training and expertise to do that, right?
You need a lot of things. You need infrastructure. You need laws. You need funding. You need an entire death investigation system in place, which we don't have.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Raquel Fortun, for joining us on this podcast. Definitely very disturbing, given the inadequacies that you were identified, but at the same time, enlightening, and hopefully things would get better in the coming years. Thank you, Dr. Fortun.